Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Since the start of Russia's special military operation in Ukraine, the EU has tied itself up in knots. It declares it must be independent of Russian energy, while at the same time terrified Moscow might terminate supplies altogether at any time. For the EU, energy policy is an ideological struggle. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we have Dmitry Babich. He's a political analyst and editor at InnoSme Internet Media Project. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with George in Budapest. George, very simple question. Does the EU have a coherent energy policy? Because it seems like, you know, I don't want to use a heat metaphor, but I will. Their hair is on fire talking about how to deal with energy during the summer and the upcoming winter. They want to cut dependence on Russia, but they're terrified, as I said in my introduction, that it could be shut off. So, I mean, what is it? Go ahead.
No, that's exactly right. And so we have, on the one hand, Ursula von der Leyen, the EU, the president of the EU Commission, who says we are going to cut ourselves off completely from Russian fossil fuels and we will never be dependent on them again. And then the next day she turns around and accuses Russia of withholding energy supplies. You know, they're holding back gas, you know, and they're using gas as a political weapon. So if you ask them, well, do you want Russian gas or don't you want Russian gas? You can't get a straight answer. I mean, it depends on what time of day you ask the question. And this is really the point. They have been accusing Russia for months and months of using gas as a weapon, when the only people who have been using energy as a weapon has been the EU. I mean, the EU, first of all, they said they banned Russian coal imports. Then they said, we're not going to have any Russian oil imports starting in December. Then they closed down the Nord Stream 2 before it even started operating. And then of course, we had Ukraine closing off one of its hubs to transport Russian gas into Europe. And then we had the sanctions coming from Canada when a compressor that was needed repairing was sent to Siemens in Germany. Germany sent it to Canada. Canada said, no, we're not returning it because it's sanctioned. And so all of the issues are being driven from the Western end. And yet the propaganda is that somehow Russia is using energy as a weapon. When did that happen?
Well, Dima, I mean, the real political weapon here has been sanctions. The only thing that's really changed with Russian energy policy vis-a-vis Europe is that the Russians said they have started charging in rubles, which it makes perfect sense because of the sanctions and the SWIFT system Russia being shut out of. I mean, if they continued paying in dollars or euros, it would just be frozen and confiscated. So, I mean, that's the only significant change. And all of the uproar over Nord Stream 1, well, it's back in business, okay? The gas is flowing again. I mean, it doesn't really make any sense to me what they want to do. And there is no unity in the European Union. So what is Russia supposed to do vis-a-vis the EU? It has to deal with individual members of the EU because the EU as a whole has no coherent policy. What say you, Dima?
Well, I think sometimes the EU just plays on the subconscious of TV viewers and people who read newspapers. Very often they just use this phrase, Putin is using gas as a weapon. They don't even add the adjective political. So people have these terrible images of World War I, gas as a weapon. You know, this is a terrible phrase to say in Europe. You know, so these people are deeply dishonest, even in the way they express themselves. They are dishonest. But you are absolutely right about what I would call collective insanity of the EU. The problem with the EU is that the sum of its members is a lot less rational than every member taken individually. I mean, all the most tragic, most fateful decisions of the EU were taken collectively. The situation with Russia is just the latest example. The experts in Germany, for example, the head of the E.ON company, he says that Slovakia is almost 100% dependent on Russian gas. Bulgaria is almost 100% dependent. And this is in Der Spiegel magazine in Germany. So even if Germany thinks that it can provide for itself, who is thinking about Bulgaria and Slovakia, right? The second such example is Syria. Let's remember how the events developed. Okay, there were disturbances, there were protests in Syria in 2011. So instead of either staying neutral or helping Assad and the opposition to find some middle of the road solution, the EU collectively supported the armed opposition. And we know the result, the civil war that continued for almost 10 years. So all of the most fateful decisions of the EU are collective. I'm terrified when I hear that Europe is going to speak with one voice.
There's no collective, though. There's no solidarity here. George is in the country right now in Hungary that basically, I won't say it on this program, but they went their own way. Let's put it that way, George.
That's right. In fact, earlier last week, the Hungarian foreign minister, Peter Szijjártó, flew to Moscow, breaking ranks with the rest of the EU, and signed an agreement with Russia for 700 million metric tons of natural gas. He did it because he said, hey, Hungary needs gas. And the Hungarians are saying, well, we're not sharing any of this gas with anyone. We're keeping all our gas. And of course, this was a day after the European Commission issued this new diktat demanding that all EU member states reduce their gas consumption by 15%. And of course, there have now been protests from a number of states, including Spain and Portugal and Greece, saying, well, why should we cut back on our gas use? This is a German problem. It's very much a part and parcel of the way the Germans do this. The Germans make these big decisions, and then they force everyone else to live with the decision. A case in point is, of course, the decision of Angela Merkel 2015 to start bringing in immigrants into Europe, which everyone else was suddenly under an obligation to take in as well.
The Germans have a peculiar understanding of solidarity, don't they? If we do it, everybody else has to do it. That's their sense of solidarity.
Yes, exactly. And in fact, it was Germany that has been very dependent on Russian gas. And then it was Germany that made these extraordinary decisions, like canceling Nord Stream 2 at the very last moment. This is why the Europeans are now saying, where was Germany when we needed them after the 2008 crisis? And we need a bailout. And suddenly the Germans say, sorry, we don't have the money to bail anyone out. So now, essentially, all of the Europeans are supposed to bail Germany out.
Well, and Dima, also we had over the last few days, we had Kiev threatening to shut a pipeline that was supplying Europe that has been agreed to. And so, this adds to the quandary here. Russia threatens to cut off energy, but it's Ukraine that is threatening to cut off Russian energy to customers in Europe. So, where's the anger towards the Ukrainians for threatening Europe's energy security? Go ahead, Dima. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, it makes sense ideologically.
There you go. That's where we're going to talk about.
It makes sense in the way of Russophobia, I'm sorry. Because what was the logic of the United States opposing Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2? They said that, this Russian gas has to go through Ukraine. So the Ukraine would get money for that. Russia said, we are going to continue to supply gas through Ukraine, but does it make sense to have a backup, to have another tube that can supply gas? No. It should all go through Ukraine. Now that there is basically this terrible confrontation between Russia and Ukraine, Ukraine is shutting some of these pipelines, saying that they are supplying what they call the occupied territories. So, I mean, Russia is again to blame, even though it was the United States and it was the EU that said that you should all rely 100% on Ukraine. Nord Stream 2 is useless. Yeah.
So, Dima, explain to our audience here, what does the United States have to do with European energy? Can you explain to me why do they're poking their beak into something that is so important? We're not talking about, you know, the size of avocados here. We're talking about if people are going to be warm in the winter.
You're absolutely right. The United States has nothing to do with this Russian-German pipeline. I mean, what would the United States say if Russia said, oh, we oppose a pipeline from Canada to the United States? But in fact, Joe Biden has been doing it for us brilliantly. You know, he created a lot of problems in American energy supply. But we never even thought about, raising any questions about pipelines between Mexico and the United States, Canada and the United States. But the United States thinks that it has the right to pronounce judgment on Russia-German project, to impose sanctions on the companies participating in it. And before that, the United States sabotaged and worked against South Stream project, which was basically aimed at supplying cheap gas to countries like Greece and Italy. Well, in fact, part of the problem with Greece, why Greece had this terrible crisis, it could be avoided if they had the Russian gas, or it would be softened in a lot of ways. But it was the EU, the European Commission, and to a great extent, the United States that basically did everything that this South Stream project never comes.
I guess my question is kind of rhetorical. What does the United States have to do with European energy security? Well, it's all about money. They want them to buy American energy, which, you know, is being fossil fuels are being attacked in the U.S. So there's only one outcome here, a higher price. So the Europeans want to get off of cheap Russian energy and pay for very expensive Gulf and American energy. Wow, that's a brilliant move, isn't it? Go ahead before we go.
Yes, it is. And of course, it makes the Europeans very uncompetitive. I mean, Europe already has problems with keeping up with East Asia. But now the one thing that they had, which was this very reliable, cheap source of energy from Russia, now they've given that up. And they've done it under American pressure. The conflict in Ukraine has come under American pressure. It was the Americans who pressed Ukraine membership into NATO. It was the Americans who continued to provoke. And basically, the Europeans just simply gave up and gave the Americans everything they wanted.
All right, I have to jump in here. Gentlemen, we have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. This is the Home Edition. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. Okay, let's go back to Dima here in Moscow. Front and center, when we look at this conflict in Ukraine, at least for the West, they won't say it out loud, but you know, it's not about freedom, it's not about democracy, it's not about territorial integrity. That's what we keep hearing on the airwaves. But it's really about energy here, and not fossil fuel energy. It's all about green energy, and Ukraine is being used as a segue to, you know, push the transition. This is something that, you know, they're gleeful about it because they don't have to bring it to their people and vote on it. They'll say it's just because, you know, rules-based order and all of this type of stuff here. But at the same time, and this is what I need to explain, they're opening up coal mines again, and maybe natural gas maybe isn't so dirty here. I mean, what are their priorities here? Because on the one hand, you know, it's, you know, territorial integrity. On the other hand, it's a Green New Deal. But they keep interweaving and clashing with each other, and they can't make up their mind what is their priority. Dima.
Well, I have, not the privilege, but the duty to read the modern German press. And I'm just stunned.
You read it so we don't have to. Thank you, Dima.
Exactly. Well, Die Bild Zeitung, you know, they write that 62% of the Germans followed the government's advice, and now they wash themselves fewer times a week and for a lesser period of time. Okay, it started working. 62% of people already believe this crap. And you know, the way the government is dealing with its people in Germany, like, you have to reduce, you know, the temperature in your bathroom. You have to wash rarely. I mean, these people accuse Russia and China of being authoritarian. But we know from politology the difference between authoritarian and totalitarian regimes. Authoritarian regimes say, okay, don't publish caricatures of your president, right? The totalitarian regimes say how you should wash yourself, which theater plays you should go to, which books you should read, you know, how you should educate your children. So in this situation, Germany now works as a super totalitarian state. They tell their people how to wash, what is good for their health. There is a very, very strange theory that they have now that washing very often is bad for your health, basically, right? And it's just insane. And the problem with totalitarian states is that they use ideology against maths, against mathematics. I mean, in Der Focus, which is a huge, very important magazine in Germany, one of their best economists, Gabor Steinbach, former head of Handelsbank, he just gave a mathematical analysis of what's going on. He said, Germany has 40 million households. 20 million of them are heated by gas. Russian gas accounts for 55% of this. How are we going to do without it? Okay? So this is a mathematical question. Their ideological answer, wash rarely, wash for shorter periods of time, you know, don't use your car, don't use your, I don't know what else, your microwave. But I mean, it smacks of the surplus, even worse.
Well, I mean, George, I mean, is this, are they going back to the 1840s? I mean, I'm trying to understand what's going on. And the world is a super competitive place. But and then we look at the Europeans, you know, I mean, what is it, you know, pragmatism? Is it ideology? Can they marry the two? It seems that they're pushing things that are just diametrically opposed to each other. And the result is cold and lack of productivity. And, you know, the world passes them by as some kind of backwater. And this is all done intentionally. Go ahead.
Yes, it's extraordinary that there's been this seamless transition from the COVID hysteria now to the energy hysteria. I mean, it's just you always don't even notice it. So we were screaming at the anti-vaxxers, the non-mask wearers, the people who were protesting against the lockdowns. You know, they were all the terrible people because they refused to express social solidarity. They were entirely selfish. And we were all supposed to hate them. So now we're rapidly going to be moving into the new era of where we hate all those who don't want to share out their energy. I mean, Hungary is going to be really in the crosshairs. You know, they don't want to share out their gas. And, you know, they're going to sign their own deals with Russia. And so this is now, and now we've got everyone who's going to be taking showers that are too long. You know, they're going to be the people.
I guess that's the new thing, shower shaming. Is that the
that's
new
right, shower shaming. Exactly. Or people, you know, who wash their cars, you know, more than once a month. I mean, so, you know, everyone's now suddenly going to be hated for in being insufficiently expressing solidarity, and of course for being pro-Putin. And so, so this is indeed how, you know, this as Dima said, this kind of this totalitarian ideology. And of course, no one ever really, you know, the parallel with COVID is the same. No one really kind of, you know, tries to ask the fundamental questions about COVID. So no one really asks the fundamental question, to what end is all this? Why are we making these sacrifices? No, you just don't, you know, shut up and just get with the program, or else, you know, we're going to be punish you. And so we're like, going to be fined for taking too long in the shower.
So we had zero COVID. Now we have zero fossil fuel. Okay.
Yes.
Nima, let me go to you. I mean, usually when these, you know, unusual and very strident demands of people, it's during a momentary crisis, okay? Momentary, so, you know, what I mean by that is that, you know, when the crisis will come to an end and you can go back to normal. This is completely open-ended. Okay, you start saving 15, you're told to save 15% on energy. Towards what end? I mean, will that make the situation better? How will it alleviate it? They don't have any answers. There's no exit from this. It just seems it's going to be accumulatory. They're going to make then 40%, then 60%, and the result will be the same. I don't understand what they're driving at, what their goal is. Go ahead, Dima.
The logic of this, I'm sorry, is ideological and totalitarian. I mean, El País writes something like this. Our people are terrified about getting the, you know, just 19% Celsius inside their homes this winter. While people in Russia have been through so many difficulties, they're much more like sustainable. So, I mean, this is typical totalitarianism. Look, the enemy is so strong. The enemy can make any sacrifices. That means that you should be making sacrifices. Okay, 15% less today, 20% less tomorrow. Don't ask us why. Well, if you ask us why, it's because of Putin, you know. If you ask us, why did we support the coup in Ukraine, which started the whole thing in 2014? Don't expect answers from us. First, these were other people. You know, we have democracy, faces change. So we're not responsible for what these people did. They're getting their pensions. I mean, Van Rompuy and Jennifer Ashton, they're all getting nice perks, you know. And don't ask any questions to them. Ask your questions to Putin, you know, via us. And also, what is very important, the totalitarian regime always requires sacrifices. And second, a totalitarian regime always intimidates you. You will all die from COVID. There will be a climate catastrophe. If you don't listen to us and if you don't wash with cold water, climate will collapse, you know. So basically, let me remind you how Hitler basically brought the Germans into wars. He said that we have not enough living space, not enough Lebensraum. If we don't expand in 2 years, we're all going to die from hunger. That was a lie, because Germans, on a much smaller territory after the World War II, created a sustainable economy which fed not only them, but
Dima, this segues perfectly to the last question I have for George here. You're right. We have the German economic miracle because there was cheap Soviet then, that later Russian gas. So, George, you know, on a global scale here, the Global South is saying, you know, the Europeans got really rich because they had access to very cheap fossil fuels, primarily oil and gas. So now they're looking, they're stepping up to the plate and say, our turn, we would like that energy to do exactly what the Europeans had and what they are they willing to give up. But we'll take it. We'll stand in line. We'll take it. That's exactly what's happening.
Yes, yes. But the strange thing is that the Europeans and to a certain extent the Americans are wedded to an ideology that is propagated by the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab and everyone. And it's not entirely clear what the ideology is, other than they want to reduce the population of the world. I mean, that's their agenda. And green energy somehow falls in with that agenda, the, you know, as was the fear of pandemics. And of course, you know, they hate people having children or anything like that. So it's a part of the same thing. So they're using this crisis of Ukraine essentially to cut all use of fossil fuels and to move to these renewables. They know perfectly well there is no way in the world that Germany can continue to be an economic powerhouse relying on solar panels and wind. But they're pushing it, and you have to think that they somehow don't want Europe and the United States to be kind of this engine for growth. I mean, they want to continue to be prosperous themselves. They don't really want to extend this prosperity to others.
Yeah, it seems, you know, that the Europeans want to set an example for the world. That's something that we see here. And, you know, eventually, you know, there'll be carbon shaming. You know, this country uses too much carbon. You know, it'll be another reason for NATO to attack a country. Oh, their footprint's too big. Okay. But it doesn't work logically, because then they become less competitive. They become poorer. They become more irrelevant. And so everyone, the learning example would be, don't do what the Europeans are doing, because it just drives you into the ground. Go ahead, Dima, last 30 seconds go to you.
Well, first, according to Der Spiegel magazine, they are already starting to call in Europe extremists. All the groups, not only about, which are concerned not only about COVID, but also about energy crisis. So we're all extremists now, people who doubt. And second, there was one person who said that basically by this policy, Europe is destroying European humane capitalism. That was Igor Sechin, the head of Rosneft. I'm just quoting him, so I'm not saying it on my own. But as I said, if we believe Der Spiegel magazine, this is all extremist. This is all extremely bad. These are all conspiracy theories that we are spreading.
Well, what we'll have is at least in the winter coming up, we'll have cold capitalism. Okay, see how that feels. Okay, watching themselves digging further into their problems. It's extraordinary to witness, gentlemen. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. I want to thank our viewers for watching us here. RT, remember, crosstalk rules.